Hi folks, it's Jacob here, the Christian, and we just want to give you a warning about this episode coming up. If your ears are of the delicate variety and you don't like potty mouths, you may not enjoy aspects of this episode. It's a good discussion,
namely every second word in this episode.
Sure. There's a few four-letter words that we drop in this episode because we're talking about swearing and offensive language. We don't use anything that we think is too offensive, but your judgment might be different to us. So if you're worried about that, maybe give this one a miss.
Welcome to A Christian and a Buddhist Walk into a Bar. My name is Jamal and I'm a Buddhist.
I'm Jacob and I'm a fucking Christian.
Are you?
I am, yeah.
Fuck. Holy shit,
there
really?
We go. We went there already. Yeah, you not noticed?
No.
I've not kept it particularly secret, I don't think.
Yeah.
We are 70-something episodes into this podcast and I thought you'd tweaked from the intro each week.
I thought I worked it out, but no. Didn't do it. Yep.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Well, with that new information, I guess we better have a freaking podcast or something, right? Yeah. Today's podcast is about swearing, Jacob.
Oh, is it, Jamal? I had no idea.
Yeah.
I was just introducing myself in my customary habit.
In your customary
as I normally do when I'm at church up the front each week. That's how it rolls.
I think that makes sense. Today's about swearing. This podcast was prompted by an interaction we had in our outside of podcast life where someone we were talking with raised a concern about the use of what I considered a fairly moderate swear word. And I guess it prompted this conversation about swearing. Is it good? Is it bad? What does God think? And I guess we thought we'd take it from there.
Yeah. Excellent. So is it good? Is it bad? What does God think?
Well, you're the authority on what God might think about it.
I'm the authority on what God thinks. We're all in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. From a Buddhist perspective, I want to start with a Christian perspective because I think that's more probably normative and usual. But what is the Christian perspective on swearing?
Well, probably the first question is what do we mean by swearing? Mm. Full stop. Because swearing, at least to my recollection, when we talk about the use of swearing in scripture, it's like swearing an oath, right? Mm. Like making vows. So that kind of swearing. And I presume that's not so much. Mm. What you're interested in, Jamal? I could be wrong.
No, yeah, it's more about the cursing. Curse words maybe is another way of saying it.
Well, cursing is that gets really interesting really quickly then, because certainly in the ancient Jewish worldview, the world of the Old Testament and even the world of Jesus' time, blessing and cursing are two sides of the same coin, right? Mm. So you're kind of invoking divine power for or against someone. You're wishing someone good or ill when you bless them or curse them. But I think that's actually quite different from the case of offensive language.
Okay.
Because offensive language, if I say shit or damn is maybe slightly, that's closer to actually cursing somebody because it goes back to the idea of someone being damned, so you're basically saying go to hell, right? So that's a bit of a curse. But if you just say, oh, something's shit, that's not it's not wishing ill on something, right?
So
it's kind of a descriptive.
Is that the definition of cursing, I guess, in the Christian sense, where it's bad if it is wishing ill on people and it's kind of ambiguous if it's not?
So I think in the biblical sense, that would be correct.
Mm-hmm.
In a broader Christian sense, I remember being in primary school and being the little Christian kid who didn't swear or whatever, and this was a bit of an anomaly, right? Mm. As you can imagine in a public school system in South Australia. Woo! and that there seems to be a kind of a cleanliness of mouth approach, which I think has more to do with culture and social norms and that kind of stuff than it has to do with the faith.
Right. Specifically. So it's the faith adopting the norms of society as a kind of excuse.
Not even the faith adopt. Like, I think the norms of society have been like heavily shaped by Christian thinking, right? Which is maybe it has more to do with not kind of the idea of saying unclean things rather than cursing per se. That, like, you know, we have the phrase of somebody being a potty mouth, right? Like, it's that kind of that idea that you're somehow being derogatory or less than gracious in your speech. And that's a kind of Christian idea, but then the specifics of what does less than gracious in your speech mean, that's quite different to the idea of cursing.
Right, and that feels to me totally about society. I mean, that to me is a class structure rather than a religious structure.
Or at least the norms are, right? Because you can have the religious impetus to be gracious in your speech, but what being gracious in your speech means is going to be shaped by culture, right?
Yeah. Like, but I think the clean and dirty kind of thing is absolutely a class structure, right? Like the idea of a potty mouth or like, you talk about dirty words or whatever else, that kind of stuff. Like, I think that is very much, much more caught up in class structure around the assumptions of certain use, you know, certain ways that people use language are considered, you know, better or worse based on your class. And so the kind of the posh upper class.
And so Paul Keating at the Dispatch Box, like that's eloquence and humour and wit and whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whereas the guy with a goon sack down at the train station at 3 a.m. in the morning is just being uncouth.
Right. And I think, you know, like a lot of things, I think people use religion as a way of enforcing norms that they want to enforce anyway, right? Like, yeah. I think you're right.
So
I think
the white picket fence kind of
right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, if you're saying that in the Bible there's nothing that says, well, actually swearing, you know, outside of kind of being mean to people is that much of a bad thing, then kind of, you know,
it's be kind and generous in your language,
right? Like, yeah,
because that reflects the saying of Jesus that we could talk about here is that. It's not what goes into a person that makes them unclean, but it's what comes out of a person, right?
Right.
So he's saying, you know, it doesn't really matter what kind of food you eat, whether you eat pork or this or that or whatever. That's not going to make you clean or dirty. It's what comes out of your mouth because that reflects where your heart's at. That's,
right. So if you are unwell and vomiting a lot, you are sinning?
I think he's being a bit more metaphorical than that.
Yes. I know. How does that tie in with the idea of taking the Lord's name in vain?
Well, so I think the taking the Lord's name in vain is much more closely related to cursing.
Right.
Because you're doing one of two things. You're actively wishing ill on someone. And it's in the Old Testament, but quoted in the New Testament is, you know, bless others, bless and do not curse, right? So if you're saying damn it, you're in the etymology of it, we don't think about it actively like this, but you're saying, I want this thing to go to hell.
Right.
And likewise, if you use the Lord's name in vain, like, you know, respond to Jesus Christ to something or whatever it is, that's kind of belittling God, speaking ill of God in a way, which is, you know, at least as bad as speaking ill of another person.
So,
although I did read once when I was at uni, just in a little, you know, fun, easily written thing, that I bet you that the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, or the Buddha are a little bit pissed that when someone hits they don't go, oh, Buddha, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, also, but I guess that is my point, right? Because, like, to go down the rabbit hole with this one a little bit,
sure.
I mean, like, I don't understand why when you hit your finger with a hammer, saying Jesus Christ is a problem, right? Because, like, realistically, like, you're not saying...
If it's a prayer... Well, sure, well, no, but I think most of the time.
Sure, but I guess here's my thoughts on this. You're not saying, "Oh Jesus, you caused me to get hit by a hammer. Fuck you," right? You're not saying, "Oh Jesus, please come and heal my finger that got hurt," or whatever else. Like you're just essentially invoking an exclamation about God. And realistically, what you're saying in that situation is, "Man, I'm really in pain.
It's actually quite a religious use,
right? Like, this really hurts. The thing I think about when I'm really hurt is Jesus, right? Yep. Is really what you're saying, right?
Yeah, and in that sense, probably, but in the sense of, for the love of Christ or something like that.
But again, what you're saying there is, for the love of Christ, why is it that I have to get hurt?
Well, it depends on what in the way I was certainly imagining that just then, it's you're applying it to somebody else's behavior that's not meeting your standards, right? So you're kind of invoking God as the defender of your standards.
Well, yeah, but I guess everything you've told me about Jesus, though, tells me that Jesus is in the everyday. It's not this sense that Jesus is like up somewhere and like, you know, disconnected from everything and is belittled by the fact that they get brought into an everyday matter, that I think Jesus wants to be involved in an everyday matter. So I guess my question is, like, in an interpretation of Jesus where Jesus has a direct engagement with your everyday life, why is it a problem to invoke Jesus when you hit your thumb?
Well, I think that's fair and reasonable as an overall comment. And then the question is, if you're making that kind of comment, to what extent is Jesus involved in your everyday life? And we can get down into whole other rabbit holes. But my observation is that if you had a Venn diagram of people who say Jesus Christ when they hit themselves with a hammer and people who are actually, you know, regularly engaged in scripture and prayer and the other things we would say are kind of, you know, Christian practice, the overlap is probably not going to be huge. That's my guesswork. I don't have the data, but... There is an interesting thing going on here, right, about the etymology of swearing, though.
Mm.
So because we decided about, 11 minutes ago that this was going to be the topic of today's ramble, I haven't done my customary level of research.
What, the whole 5 minutes of research you normally do?
But I remember seeing something years ago that suggested that the things that are used as swear words are obviously quite contextual, but tend to be the things that are regarded as quite private acts or that are kind of sacred in society, if you like.
Yeah.
And so in our culture, the kind of the worst swear words that you can use tend to be associated with sexual activity. That's kind of, it's a private, sacred thing. And so by bringing genitalia or that kind of stuff into it, you kind of are violating social norms. Whereas in Shakespeare's day, apparently, that was quite fine. And saying fuck was not particularly offensive in that time. But saying Jesus Christ was a terrible thing that you couldn't do because of the different things that were kind of regarded as sacred in the culture. So I think in some ways the prevalence of religious swearing or using the Lord's name in vain, if you like, or whatever it might be, is on the one hand a bit of a hangover from when society was more Christian than it was, because I think we're going to see less of that because it's just less it's less violating a social norm the longer you go on the one hand. And on the other hand, it's something that is less sacred to us in society generally now.
Does it explain why we swear about things that are sacred?
Well, because I think that the definition of a swear word or an offensive word, right, is that it's violating social norms.
Right, so because it's, because it... Yes, I still don't...
So you're talking... it's a word that... is about the things that you wouldn't normally talk about in polite company, right?
Yeah. But again, why is that associated with negativity, though?
Your guess is as good as mine. I'm giving you the guts of something I read like 7 years ago.
Okay, I find that interesting, right? Like, I do. And like, I think that idea of violating social norms is... Yeah,
it's probably associated with pain and disgust and that kind of thing that you want some kind of word that is strong enough to express how you're feeling.
Like, right.
Yeah.
Well, and again, I think I get it when it comes to things that are considered profane social norms, right? So, like, I think swear words about defecation, right? Mm-hmm. I can see the link there to go, well, this is something that is you know, socially you don't normally talk about it, and it's, you know, considered a little bit disgusting, and so therefore if you talk about it you're like being rude, right?
Sure.
But like I just don't get it when it comes to things that are considered good. Like, you know, like I mean, sure, back in the 1500s, talking about sex could be considered profane. But, yep. Like, I think these days, I mean, we live in a society obsessed with sex. Like, I don't quite know how saying fuck as a, like, as a kind of an expletive makes any sense in that sense. Because, like, you're talking about something that most people are pretty positive about.
So can you explain to me then, like, just following that bouncing ball, like, why is the C word so terrible?
Well, I think it depends on the context in which you use it. In the US, it's terrible. In Australia, it's not, right? Like, I think there's a social norm there going on there, right?
I wouldn't say it's not in Australia, maybe to a lesser extent.
Right. Well, and again, so all right, so maybe what it is a hangover, right? Which, again, there's a second point about the religious versions of this, but let's just go to this one for now.
Sure.
I think it's a hangover because... the word cunt, right,
mm-hmm.
is, you know, it's a anatomically correct term. Like, it's not something that's like actually that like negative, unless you're living in a world which completely, you know, suppresses all forms of, you know, female bodily autonomy and that kind of stuff. So I think there's a hangover in the sense that that, you know, in a very patriarchal society that wants to completely demean any concept of, you know, female anatomy, that the word cunt can be an insult, right? That one I can kind of like, and it's
and it does depend on how the word's been used historically, right?
Right.
Like there's a reason that the N-word is, I wouldn't say that's even so much of a swear word as just a deeply offensive term to a particular right. group of people because of the historical uses of that term and
yeah,
everything else.
For sure, yeah. And I think, so I think you probably, it's a rude word now because of a hangover from, yeah, a few hundred years ago, right?
Sure.
I guess it kind of loops back though to this whole idea of like, I don't get why saying religious terms is that bad, because again, like, there's no point in time where the word Jesus Christ was socially considered to be some rude, hidden thing that you shouldn't say.
Well, I think there was a period of time where it was considered a bit of a thing that you wouldn't say.
Mm.
Like, this is the holiness aspect. And you actually see it with the divine name in Judaism, right? Mm. Like, so Yahweh being the name of God in the Old Testament. Which is it's when God says to Moses, "I am that which I am," like that makes in Hebrew the term Yahweh, and that name is so holy that you can't even say it within Judaism, to the point where we're not completely confident that that's how you pronounce it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because nobody spoke it for like hundreds of years. So that happens as well in religious traditions, right? Like, and if the idea that Jesus Christ is this particularly special guy that, you know, it's mentioned at church and a priest can say it, or it can be in the Bible or whatever, but you wouldn't, you know, if you don't talk about religion and politics in your society and culture, then outside of the church, no, you wouldn't mention that stuff, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's definitely been the case at some times in Western history.
Right, but even if you wouldn't mention it, he's still good. Like,
sure.
like it's not like
unless
shit,
he's done a bad thing.
Which is like a bad thing.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's, you know, it's like, it's, no one's going around going, "Oh, Jesus, oh, I just don't like that guy." All right, like, they're all like, sure, you might be private, but it's not, I don't know, there's a
negative
connotation with
from.
All the other ones, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And even if you want to go back to some of the ones that we don't have a negative connotation with now, you could historically see where that is.
I think there's a sense, perhaps, in which with the negative connotation, you could see it in two ways. It's a kind of cry for mercy of, like, I hit my thumb, Lord Jesus, help me. Mm. Which is a good thing to say. But if you're using it kind of towards somebody else in a disapproving manner, then it possibly falls into the category of cursing in terms of at least the intent with which that would have developed in the culture, right? Like, you know, well, Jesus is going to get you for this.
Yeah,
like,
right. Yeah, okay.
I don't know.
I can see that.
What does Buddhist swearing look like? How do you swear as a Buddhist? Can you be mindful and swear?
I've never heard of Buddhist swearing. Like, there are no.
I heard a Buddhist swear earlier on this episode.
but like for example, I cannot think of a Buddhist curse word.
Yeah,
like saying Buddha is not a curse word.
Sure.
Saying like Mara, like which is like the equivalent of the devil in the Buddhist kind of theology, is not even a curse word. Like,
it's interesting, isn't it, that the Jesus Christ is the more commonly used as a curse word than Satan.
Yeah, right.
Like, no one hears their thumb and says, "Oh, Satan!"
Right. Like, if you're doing that, yeah. But no, but like I've never really heard, like, in the same way that, you know, religion mimics society, in certain conservative circles of Buddhism, swearing is looked down upon because, you know, it's a thing, right? So, like, you know, I've heard monks, like, you know, talk about, you know, jokingly giggle and go, "Oh, I can't say that word," right? But, like, that's a social construct. There's nothing religious. Like, there is nothing I have ever read in Buddhism that even talks about swearing. Like, it's just not a thing that seems to exist on a radar.
So is swearing... Would you think that swearing is indicative of anything? Just to, like, to go back to the kind of what's in your heart and stuff coming out of what's in your heart.
So I think that's it, right? I think the closest thing you probably have in Buddhism is this idea of, like, don't think ill of people, right? That, like, you know, you will generate...
that's a negative attachment.
Yeah, you'll generate some bad karma if you think ill of people. And I guess... But yeah, like, if you think ill of people and then swear at them in that, that's maybe, like... an additional bit of ill you're thinking about them, but like, not really.
It's kind of, it's bad enough to have had the ill thought.
Right.
Even before you've expressed it, right?
Exactly.
Which, again, relates to things that Jesus said.
Right. And there is the concept of right speech and the idea that you don't want to speak ill of people, that like, you know, it's one thing to think ill of people. It's another thing to go out and like, you know, chew them out, whatever else. And like, you know, and that kind of thing, which I think, but again, they don't really talk about what the words are. Like, it almost doesn't matter what words you use. It's, you know, if I swear at you in a mild-mannered way, that's a lot better than me not swearing at you but telling you you're terrible, right? Like, So, again, it's not so much about the specifics of what's used. It's about the intent and the kind of the focus behind that kind of matters a lot more.
So, speaking of intent then, if we think about the way that a lot of our society's like norms and customs and stuff are structured, they seem to have a lot to do with intent, right? Like, if you do something with good intent but it doesn't work out well, then that's kind of better than doing something with bad intent but not doing it properly, that kind of thing. Does swearing kind of reflect the way swearing is treated reflect kind of the legalism of a society or culture, perhaps? Or like, is it if we're regulating the things that people say, like even just with social norms, right, are we regulating the wrong thing because we're not really getting to the heart of the matter? We're just kind of changing external behavior.
Well, so I guess this maybe goes down a, you know, going in a legalistic path here, but I guess we could, that to me brings in the question of discrimination, right? So we have a Racial Vilification Act or Anti-Discrimination Act, and you know, I mean, that is a legal document that attempts to regulate what people say, right? In Australia, we don't have a right to free speech, which is the funniest thing I always point out. Everyone's like, "Oh, it's a free country." Like, no, it's not. We have a lot of laws around what we can and cannot say, and actually, no, we don't have a right to free speech. But, I mean, certainly the intent of the Racial Vilification Act is to put constraints on any concept of free speech, right? To say, well, there are a bunch of things you just can't say.
Which is occasionally particular words like the N-word.
Right.
But occasionally just broader comparisons. Like, you know, the word monkey is a perfectly fine, harmless word if you're talking about the thing that you go and see at the zoo. But as soon as you apply it to a person, you're racially vilifying.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. And I think there's a sense there where the dual purpose of that act is partially to try and limit the amount that people think about that. But I would also say that it's, you know, I think, I don't know the legal distinction here, but or I don't know the ins and outs of this law, but I know that the idea of causing offence is a concept legally in some of those laws, right? That if you have caused offence to somebody, that can be a grounds for racial discrimination.
But this is where people have a big problem with some of the racial discrimination laws and that kind of thing, right? Like,
right. So, but I guess that's the point, right? That there's a sense in which we're doing both, in which, you know, I think society at some point goes, I kind of don't care what you think. You're not allowed to do something that deeply hurts somebody, right? So, if you want to be racist in your own mind, we can't really stop that. but we are going to put a boundary on the ways you can offend people through your racism, which is actually more about murder,
right? Like, yeah. if you really hate someone, we can't stop you really hating someone, but jeepers, there's going to be consequences if you actually cut their head off.
Right. Right. And so, yeah, so I think that kind of goes to that sense of like, well, what is it about intent versus, you know, actual action, right? Mm-hmm. And I think as a society, and I guess we've decided. Kind
of protection of the individual, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
But yeah, as a society, we've decided that there is some kind of line that exists with, you know, the fact that I have a right to not be hurt by what you say, irrespective of what you're thinking. Mm-hmm. Right? You could be sitting there thinking really racist thoughts to me, but if you don't say that, that is somehow more socially acceptable than if you were to say those thoughts, which, you know, I can kind of get. Like, again, I'm not a legal expert, so I don't want to go too deep down that kind of, the concepts of what's the right or wrong thing to do there. But, like, I do get that sense in which if you want society to function properly, people at least need to be able to interact with a level of respectability and, you know, mutual understanding, even if they have differences of opinion in what they think.
But if you have to, I feel like we've moved a little bit kind of, we're in a different basket of offensive language here, right? And if you have to legislate that stuff, and you know, I'm a fan of anti-discrimination legislation. I think it is doing a good thing, but also, like, in an ideal society, you wouldn't actually need that stick,
yeah,
right? Because the social norms would just kind of do the job for you. You wouldn't need a cop on the beat, so to speak, regulating the stuff that people said, because people would self-regulate that, and perhaps, you know, ultimately, that's where the regulation leads, in the same way as we've had anti-smoking laws for a long time. Although, again, like, vapes come in and all of a sudden a bunch of people that would never dream of smoking a cigarette, they'll happily have a vape. So maybe that's maybe there is a place for the legislation in all of that. But, like, that it kind of, legislation can shape social norms rather than just reflecting them.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I get that. And yeah, I think there's...
But ideally, you wouldn't need it, right?
Yes, because, correct.
But this goes to, well, you know, ideally, you would have people whose hearts are shaped out of love.
Right, right? Yeah. And I think part of the reason laws in society exist is because there's an acceptance fundamentally that you're not going to have an ideal situation. And so you need to have some level of social norms and protections of those norms to deal with a society full of people who are imperfect and not going to behave in an ideal way.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. One of the things I'm very interested about when it comes to swearing is actually a little, again, something random I heard on a podcast one time. But supposedly they've there's actually two bits of information here. One is that supposedly people can deal with more pain if they swear.
Okay.
So
that is interesting.
They've done studies where essentially they submerge their hands in cold water and, like, you know, water that is painful. So painfully cold.
Is this
cold?
Just kind of externalizing? Is that the
idea? Yeah, yeah. I think it's that. Yeah, but yeah, people who actively swear whilst their hands are submerged in cold water can deal with lower temperatures of water and more painful, you know, objectively more painful things than people who don't swear.
I feel like if I was swearing in that situation, that's activating a whole bunch of physiological stuff as well. Like if I was sticking my hand in freezing icy water, I would either be kind of like gritting my teeth and trying to get through it, or I'd be swearing probably quite, maybe not loudly, but, you know, voraciously, and that's going to get my heart doing more things as opposed to trying to suck it up, which is probably going to be unhelpful.
Right, Yeah. So for whatever reason, there's that.
Yeah.
The other one that I really like, and I use a lot in my life in general actually, is people trust you more if you swear.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, swearing has been proven to increase trust.
Is that because you're more? What's their theory on that?
I don't think they did a kind of theoretical hypothesis as to why they were just.
Why would you do a study like that and not give a hypothesis?
Because you're a social scientist and you want more funding in the future. But at least my working hypothesis of it is that one of the things that gets people to trust you the most is vulnerability.
Sure.
Right, that if you expose vulnerability to somebody, they are more likely to expose vulnerability back to you, but B, trust you because Essentially, you're exposing something that is scary, and you know you're taking a risk and giving trust to them by exposing that vulnerability. And so I think by swearing, you are indicating to that person that you are willing to break a social norm, that you are willing to do something that is unallowed, at least socially, in order to interact with that person. And so therefore that person, you know, probably feels like you're being more vulnerable. You are taking a greater risk in order to engage with them.
I don't know that I would have thought about it in terms of risk. Like, I was just thinking that if you're swearing when you're speaking, at least kind of in my impression of Australian culture, that you're less likely to beat around the bush. Mm-hmm. And you're more likely to call a spade a fucking shovel, right?
Like, yeah, well, and maybe that's also it, right? Again, this is just my own theory off the back of this. It's not actually a research thing, but yeah.
Yeah, because I reckon that swearing sometimes is actually like a defense against vulnerability.
Mm.
Or can be used that way.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And I think it could be perceived both ways, right? Yeah. I think there are certain contexts where it could be about vulnerability, but I completely agree. There are certain contexts where you swear, it indicates that you're more willing to be direct, and so people might trust the fact that you're being direct because you're giving all the social markers that you are going to be direct. Yeah.
So just to track back, if we can, to swearing and Buddhism. Mm. So if we run with this kind of hypothesis that there are no swear words in Buddhism, aside from monks who are attached to some strange social things, I guess that kind of tracks, because if you were perfectly enlightened, then you wouldn't be affected by somebody speaking offensively of you in any way. So, like, kind of as a Buddhist, are there words or terms that you wouldn't say or that you would find offensive if somebody said to you?
The short answer is no, and I think you hit the nail on the head there, which is that to find something offensive is almost a proof of your attachments, right?
Sure.
So there's an old Buddhist story, actually. This is a really, I really like this story. And it's this monk, I think this story is taken out of a Chinese tradition, Mahayana story. But so there's a monk that's in a monastery, and he decides to go off in solitude for a while. And he's like, I'm going to go in solitude. I'm going to go and meditate to enlightenment. So he goes off, and he's in this monastery, and he goes off to this little island. So this monastery is in like a lake, and he goes off to this island, and he's put on this island with a little hut, just himself. And then every day the other monastics like ferry out food to him for the island, but they just leave it there. He's not talking to anybody. And he's there for a year. He's completely isolated, just on this island in the middle of the lake. And then he gets to a point where he thinks, oh, I've become enlightened. Like, I've got there. I've worked it out.
Brilliant.
And so he writes a poem back to his master, to essentially, you know, declare his enlightenment. Right. So he writes this gorgeous poem. It's like this, you know, haiku kind of thing, you know, on brilliant calligraphy parchment. And he writes, you know, the monk who was off in the wilderness has found his way to the light, and returns bathed in the Buddha's wisdom or something, right?
Sure. It's
a beautiful poem, and gives it to the monk who's delivering the food, and it says, you know, go and give this to the master, and, you know, go and tell him what I've done. So he goes off and he gives it to the master, and the master looks at it and he goes, oh, okay. Claiming he's become enlightened. So the master gets a big red ink brush, and over the top of the calligraphy he writes the word fart, and he writes the next line fart, and he writes the next line fart, and he just graffitis over it. He says, yep, give this back to the monk on the island and see what happens. So, you know, it's delivered back to the monk on the island, and the monk on the island opens up this beautiful, and he expects it to be this, you know, this
congratulations.
And he opens up and he just reads fart, 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 and he's just enraged. He's completely, like, loses his mind. He's like, what the fuck is going on? I can't believe this. He jumps on the boat, and, you know, rows himself back to the shore, storms into his master's, little shrine, and plonks it down on his desk. Says, what is this? What is going on? And the master just goes, well, if, you know, you claimed to be, you know, enlightened, unmoved by the winds of time, and yet three little farts brought you running all the way back from your island.
That's brilliant. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, that's exactly it, right? They're like, you know, if you were to get offended at what people say to you, then, you know, what the hell? You know, that's just attachment.
So is there then a Buddhist case, and I don't mean kind of Jamal's personal case because I know that exists, but is there a Buddhist case for something like anti-discrimination legislation? Or is it really like, well, people should be able to say what they say, you're just a dickhead if you say certain things, and that's a sign that you're further from enlightenment and you really shouldn't do it. But
yeah, I think there is a Buddhist case for it, and there's also a Buddhist case against it.
Okay.
And like in everything in Buddhism, everything's contradictory. I think the Buddhist case for anti-discrimination probably goes something along the lines of that, you know, people are imperfect and that, you know, you don't want to, you know, essentially, even, you know, if you accept that people are imperfect and are going to be offensive to each other, then you don't want to, you know, drastically hurt people for reasons that are based on people's imperfections, right? Like, it's not fair on one person to be deeply offended and hurt by someone else being imperfect and not anywhere near enlightenment. There's an inherent lack of justice.
So it's kind of both people's imperfections are kind of working to create that situation, right?
Yeah, although maybe more so the person who's using the offensive language, right?
Sure.
That the person who is the party who is being offended, kind of, you know, there's a natural justice sense in which you go, well, it's, you know, that person shouldn't have their own peace of mind disturbed by someone else being a dickhead and not being enlightened, right? Sure. And I think there's a Buddhist argument there, but I think that there's a counter Buddhist argument that says that creating situations where people can practice not being offended, and, you know, that actually that there's a sense in which giving people situations and struggles to work through and have to learn how to deal with the fact that people are going to offend them, and actually
helps you on the road to enlightenment.
It helps you become more enlightened if you can learn how to not be offended by people being dickheads to you, right? So, like, it goes both ways.
Yeah, that is interesting. Mm. Have we walked into a bar already with a little trip to an island, or do we have to endure something that, quite frankly, is probably not going to be as fun?
Look, if you want to call that the bar walking, we can. But I mean, we can also walk into a bar again. It's totally up to you. It's up to you, Jacob.
Oh shit.
No, all right. Well, no. To be fair, you did remind me of this time a Christian and a Buddhist walk into a bar. We're going to go again, they walk into a bar, and this priest is sitting at the bar, and he's you know, deep in thought, and they go, well, what's going on, mate? And they go, I don't know what happened. I was trying to do my job today, and I swore, and I really messed up. And they go, like, what happened? And they said, he's like, I was walking around, and I was doing the after service, and and someone walked up to me and said, oh, you know, Father, that was a damn fine mass, you know, damn good, and I said to him, I said, oh, well, you know, I'd really rather you didn't use profanity. And then my congregant came to me and was like, well, no, I mean, I was so damned impressed. I put $5,000 in the offering plate. And then I said, holy shit. that's about as good as you're going to get today.
Yeah, the other one was better.
Yeah, I know.
Go on.
No, I was just going to say, do you know who is absolutely worth swearing in joy about?
Going to be Kevin MacLeod.
It's
going to
be Kevin MacLeod. It is.
My New Year's resolution that I've held to appallingly is just to mention that we are putting this show together on Ngunnawal and Ngambri land. Kevin MacLeod's done the music.
Yes. And if you would like to send this episode to, you know, small children, people who are deeply impressionable, feel free to do so. And you can email us their complaints at christianbuddhistbar@gmail.com.
We might see you next week.
We should record an intro to that to just tell people they're swearing in the episode.
Yeah, hang on. I should just... Hi, folks. It's Jacob the Christian here. And as somebody once said to me, you need to be careful with your Christian ears with this podcast episode that is coming up. Why is that, Jamal?
It's because they're swearing.
No.
Yeah, I know. If you are, if you're fine with swearing, you should listen. And if you're not, you can go fuck yourself. It's actually
I was going to say it's actually quite a good episode. I like this one. But we might need to re-record that.
No, come on.
Unfucking believable.